The town may be kind of small, but these folks have big smiles and big hearts. And they know what it is to have simple fun down our way, where old-fashioned singing and homey gatherings make living mighty pleasant.
Yeah, he's a hell of a dresser, let me tell you. He wears invisible clothes, so like when he walks in the room, it's so gaudy that you know no one looks at you, so you're invisible.
Keep rolling.
Welcome to Abandoned Albums, the documentary podcast where we take a closer look at some albums that may have been forgotten about over time, and some albums you might not even know existed. I'm your host, Keith R. Higgins. And riding beside me on this information superhighway is none other than Rob Janicki.
Hey, Keith, how are you?
You know, Rob, the words I thought I brought, turns out I left them behind.
That third double martini was starting to get to me.
On this episode of Abandoned Albums, we blew the dust off an old tape of ours and it revealed an interview with the Replacements leader, Paul Westerberg, from 1987. So here's the interview with Paul Westerberg, talking about Pleased to Meet Me. So how'd you come up with the title of the record?
It took us 5-10 minutes to come up with that one. I think Tommy was responsible for that. A lot of people didn't get the joke. I see a lot of interviews and things where they think it's Pleased to Meet You. Yeah, it's sort of, you know, an obnoxious phrase that we've been known to use on occasion. It fit the cover.
What's the story with the cover of the album?
We've been known to lift a few things in our time, and this one is no exception. It was we took it from an old Elvis cover, the lettering at least. We kind of like the dancing letters, the old 50s sort of feel to it, and we, you know, sort of contrasted it with the photo, which has nothing to do with Elvis at all, but it was that kind of record. We figured we were down in Memphis, and it was a lot bluesier and, you know, a little funkier than we're used to playing. And, you know, that was sort of the spirit we were in.
Yeah, speaking of bluesy, Nightclub Jitters is a pretty bluesy tune. What's the backstory there with that song?
Nightclub Jitters was written in Minneapolis. Actually, it was one of the first songs I ever written walking down the street, where I had a vague idea of the chord sequence, but the melody came to me in my head, and the song, or the lyrics were written as I was going to the Super America, I think, going for a walk in the afternoon, and it was very, it fit my mood at the time, because I think someone wanted me to go out and see their band, and I didn't want to go, not for the fact that I didn't want to see them, but I just feel uncomfortable sometimes going to nightclubs, and it's, the song sort of chronicles that, where you take a drink before you go out, and you don't feel really in touch with the scene that you started with. And you know, that's maybe a few people will poke fun at you or something for, you know, changing or being different, not like you were when you were 19 and you hung out every night. But it was sort of a realization that we had changed, and, we're 8 years older now and we don't hang out at bars every night.
Tommy learned how to play stand-up bass for that track, yeah?
Tommy looked at it and said, "I can't play this." You know, we all went out for a sandwich and came back in 15 minutes, and Tommy was like, boom, 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 boom. You know, he picks up, he's a good musician. He's a lousy bass player, but he's a good musician. He picks things up real quick. So that was why we did that, because, you know, he did that so quick. And Chris was learning new beats also, where he pretty much is a straight drummer, where he'll play like, you know, Ringo or whatever. But like I say, we had time to experiment with, you know, try a different beat for once, and they helped us too. Like Dickinson and the engineers, who are also musicians, they suggested things like tune the guitars.
Critters, what's the cover, where shall we park?
just once for love. They say now don't be a stranger. That really don't matter to me. I'd be willing to wager that it don't matter much if we keep in touch.
You recorded Pleased to Meet Me in Memphis. What was that like for you guys?
It was the coolest thing we ever did. Because we knew we wanted to record somewhere else. We actually we recorded first in Minneapolis at Blackberry Way. We did some demo stuff. We were planning on recording here. And after cutting a few things, we thought that it would be good for us to try it somewhere else where we wouldn't have the distractions of being at home, where you can go home at night. And it's much better. I mean, for us, we recorded like 6 or 7 records at home, and to be able to not go home and be comforted at night, it's better for the music in a way, because it makes you think of nothing but the music.
What was different about the recording of this record as opposed to the recording of previous records?
We've taken our time, which is something we rarely do, just because we're very impatient. And it was the best thing in the world for us. It got boring, but it was it also got the better songs, where if it would have been up to us, we would have been done with the record in a week. Like always, we pretty much record and then maybe overdub a little later, but this time we would actually play songs over and over and over till we actually got the beat down. Dickinson, the producer, got Chris to play in time. And of course, by that time,
Mary had a new steady, Stanley Brooks. He had a good disposition, intelligence, reasonable good looks. In fact, she thought this might be the real thing. But not long after, Stan's family moved away. And that was that.
The legendary Jim Dickinson produced Pleased to Meet Me. What was it like working with somebody like that?
You know, he's a rocker. You know, he's an excellent musician. And it's the first time we'd ever worked with a producer who was really a top-notch musician, who could play anything and pretty much had an idea of what we wanted as far as like what we were playing. His role was very limited as far as like he didn't tell us what to play. He left that to us, which, you know, worked well. I think if we would have had someone trying to tell us what to play, we would have had trouble. But he, you know, got the sound that we wanted as far as Chris was concerned, the drums. And he allowed us to do what we wanted, you know. Other producers would tell you to turn down or try this way and this. He would, you know, let us play on 10 and, you know, hook up 4 amps at a time. And
so who else has Jim Dickinson played with?
He's worked with, you know, the Stones and stuff. He's played a little piano on Wild Horses, and he claims he played maracas on Brown Sugar, which could be disputed, but he doesn't remember. You know, this was a long time ago, so who knows what state they were in.
Did he play anything on Pleased to Meet Me?
Dickinson played a hell of a good organ on Valentine's.
Turns into a plane, and I guess that's right on par. Who is left to blame?
Yes, speaking of Valentine, another one of my favorite songs on this record. When did you guys write that?
2 years ago, I think. And we've been playing it live for quite a while. And the version we have on the record is pretty much the same as we've been playing it, except for the keyboard and the vocal. The vocal I like, because there was some controversy there that someone thought it didn't sound terribly spirited, which it doesn't. But that's kind of what I liked. It sounded like I was very tired and sort of weary of the whole thing, and that fits the song well. So we had to have a discussion about that. They thought it should be belted out more, like stridently singing "Tonight Makes Love," you know.
What's the song "Valentine" really about?
I'm still deciding what it's about. It's about kind of a person, but I don't like really explaining it because a lot of people will take it in different ways. And I kind of enjoy having people come up and say that Valentine is cool because it's about this and that. I think it's basically about the fact that the line, "Tonight belongs to you, tomorrow's mine," saying that, taking our usual loser standpoint, that our time is not now.
Your songwriting has sometimes been referred to as Beatlesque.
Sure, it's Beatlesque, yeah. I mean, a lot of stuff I do is Beatlesque. And that's, I'm not trying to get out of it or anything, but people that don't really understand music will think something is Beatlesque when they'll go from a seventh chord to a minor chord. That is now considered Beatlesque, which actually it's more Tin Pan Alley is what it is. It's like following the melody with the chords, whereas rock and roll is basically chords and then melody over that.
Much like a Beatlesque sound, do you think there is a distinctive replacements sound?
There is a replacement style, and I guess I can't really explain it, but when I hear a band that copies it, and there is such a band or bands that will, you know, lift certain things, the guitar figure being an octave thing, which Bob would always do, and a lot of a busy bass line is a signature of the Replacements, because that's Tommy, who is a frustrated guitar player. A bass player will pretty much thump with the chord. Tommy will throw in extra notes, like on one chord, you know, and more melodic. So it's sort of a melodic bass line, octave guitar, and off-key vocal, and Chris struggling to keep the time. You know, it's our song.
You can develop better control by eliminating the stimulus, or by modifying the stimulus, or by modifying the response.
Historically, you've been the main songwriter for the bulk of the songs on previous Replacements records. But I've noticed on this record, you're sharing songwriting credits on a few of the tracks with Chris and Tommy.
The songs that we're all credited with are songs where I would come up with the major idea and not want to do it. And through Tommy and Chris's insistence or exuberance, they would show me that the song was worthwhile, and they would suggest, you know, tempo or do this. I mean, they never really suggest lyrics or anything like that, but, you know, that constitutes writership in my mind, just the fact that they wake me up to realize when we have a good song.
And speaking of songs, I wanted to go back to one that actually is written solely by you, the song "I Owe You." Who are you telling off in that song?
I owe you nothing. That was the name of the song. That's a lot of people think that's about Bob or Peter, our former manager, or the label in particular. It's basically focused at anyone who gets in our way, you know. That's the Replacements at their most bitchy, shall I say.
I was born in Minneapolis, so I am familiar with the concept of a skyway.
The skyway high above the busy little one way, in my stupid hat and gloves at night I lie awake wondering if I'll sleep, wondering if we'll meet out in the street. Would you take the skyway? It don't move at all like a subway. It's got bums when it's cold like any other place. It's warm up inside, sitting down and waiting for a ride beneath the skyway.
place I catch my ride most every day. There wasn't a damn thing I could do or say up in the skyway. Skyway. Skyway.
Paul, for those folks listening that might not know what a skyway is, would you mind laying down some knowledge as to what a skyway is?
They're basically the sidewalks above the street, because it's too cold in the winter to walk, and the businesses, you know, feel they'll get people to come downtown. And it's like you can walk for miles and not ever go outside. You can walk around the whole city through the skyway system. And it's generally the people who are shoppers and work. And so this song was sort of written from the point of a guy who's, you know, like myself, who I don't go up in the skyways, you know. I mean, what do I have to do up there? I never go shopping or anything, so I sit down there and watch the people walk by.
Harold, my dear, ring for Higgins and have him see if the morning mail has come.
I was about to go out and look for it myself.
I said let Higgins do it.
You know, one of my favorite songs off the record is Nevermind. Can you tell us a little bit about that song?
Nevermind is one of my favorite songs in the record, and it almost didn't make it because it was done the way it was, and a few people thought it was very vague, and I tried to go in and do the lyric over and I got pissed off, and then it ended up with the lyrics that are on there. So partially the lyrics are for the people who are trying to make me change it, and it is like it's over, it's all over, but the shouting, you know, never mind, it's like, get out of my face. You know, if the song doesn't make sense, that doesn't matter. The feeling is like, never mind. It's similar to I Don't Know, but I Don't Know a few more steps. It's like, okay, you know, just never mind. You don't understand me. I don't know what to say to you. The words I thought I brought, I left behind. So, never mind.
Such a great line.
So the song Alex Chilton, let's talk about that for a second. Why did you write about him?
We want people to know who Alex is, who don't, never heard a big star. And it's like, it's our way of like, you know, he doesn't need our help, he doesn't want our help, but damn it, he's gonna get it, whether he likes it or not. Whenever he would walk in the studio, we would turn off the song.
He looks right at you, and he knows you're keeping something
from
him,
but
he gets this big grin on his face like, yep, I know.
You know, he scares me in a way, but...
Alex Chilton is, I'm happy to say, a friend of ours. Alex is a strange guy where it's difficult to get close to him and to know him. I'm still kind of in awe of him when I meet him and we get together. We hung out in Memphis a little bit, and I figured I wanted to write a song. I wanted to bring it right out into the open. I mean, a lot of bands are influenced by him and will coyly lift a phrase or a riff or something from him. I figure, just come right out and write a song about him. You know, what's wrong with that? I mean, everyone else pays homage to him in, you know, around the barn kind of ways. We, you know, Alex is one of the best songwriters in the world, and, you know, I like the guy, and he paid us $50.
I know Can't Hardly Wait has been around for a while. You play it live, but it hasn't been on a record yet. What made you put it on this one?
We tried to record it, I think, on the last two records. And we had frankly gotten a little tired of it. And so we tried to do it differently. We figured the song's either dead forever or we're going to do it differently and I'm going to change some of the words. So we did record it differently, very quietly. I think probably because I was hungover that day. And I couldn't stand hearing a loud guitars. I mean, people are going to think that because Big Noise Replacement's trying to have a hit, but basically I was hungover and I couldn't stand my guitar loud. So we started off with the quiet guitar and everything sort of fell in from there. After the quiet guitar was on, we figured, let's put horns on and then strings, and it got, a little out of hand, but the lyrics were rewritten the following night. It blossomed into the grand production that it is today, which is the Memphis horns and the strings, which I have grown to accept. I'll tell you right now, it wasn't my idea, and I didn't like it at first, and I can handle it, but you're going to hear the song live, and you're going to wonder, if you're coming to hear The Replacements because Can't Hardly Wait is your favorite song, we may have a little trouble. It's like we're still a rock and roll band on the very outer edges of rock and roll, what a lot of people think that is. We're very sloppy, we're very loud and spirited, and that always comes first rather than musicianship and trying to sound like the record.
When you guys are playing live, do you change your lyrics?
I do, to make it fresh for me, and plus, I frankly don't remember them all the time, and I will a lot of times sing words that just sound good to me. And then I'll work a song that way by trying to rhyme with the one word that I continually keep saying that sounds good to roll off the tongue or to spew out. You'll notice I sing a lot of words with the vowel sound of I, because it's very easy for my voice. I have a low voice, and it's easier to hit a high note saying I than it is O.
What kind of a man is he?
I'm a guy who likes to work on my car. I like to take it apart and put it back together. I get to working on it and forget where I am, what time it is. I even forget to eat.
You don't forget to smoke, though.
I always smoke when I work. They go together. It's a combination of things. It's got a filter that works. Then there's this flip-top box. I like things that are well-designed. This box is interesting and practical.
Filter, flavor, flip-top box. Popular filter price.
So once the decision was made to let Bob go, was there ever a consideration that The Replacements was going to come to an end?
I thought, well, okay, I'll form my own band, and then I'll need a bass player and a drummer. Well, who am I going to ask? I'll ask, the best bass player and drummer that I know, Chris and Tommy. And it's like it made no sense. So we, that was like one afternoon, I think, that we thought we would disband because we were very bored with not playing. We had played for 7 years, and we all of a sudden stopped playing because I broke my finger in New York one night. And because of Bob's drifting away from the group, and we were afraid for a while, and we didn't know what to do. And, after you, it's sort of like when you stop for a while and you sit back and you look at what you're doing, it makes you think like, is this what I want to do with my life? What the hell is this? Mm-hmm. You travel around and you play your little guitar and people yell at you, and then you go and do it again, and it's like you get used to sitting at home and seeing how regular people go to work and come home, and then after being home for 9 months, you realize that if you don't do this, you'll go absolutely crazy.
You guys ultimately found someone to replace Bob Stinson, and that is Slim. What can you tell us about Slim?
Slim is a hell of a good guitar player. Slim is his name, that's it. He ain't got no last name as far as I know. He's played around Minneapolis for a long time, it's like, if anybody wants the best guitar player in town, they would call him. He's like the hired gun of the city, and we had never thought that he would want to play with us. We'd always known him. Our first gig, in fact, we played with when he was playing with Curtis A. This was back in like 79 or something. And it worked out perfectly because we had been getting tapes and letters from guitar players all over the place, and we chose Slim more because he fit our personality. I'm proud of that, at least. We didn't go out and get a hotshot hired guy who could play great. Slim is not the greatest guitar player in the world, but he is as good on his instrument as we are. And it's like we did the thing. We drank beer one afternoon and hired him before we even played. We wanted someone, you know, from our neck of the woods and someone who thought the way we did. And he has no aspirations for superstardom or mega wealth or anything like that.
Your fans have been known to be pretty high energy. And as the years have gone by, your fans have only increased in number. How do you guys handle that now?
The people who love our records, the slower material and the quiet songs, are the ones who hide in back. And the ones who come up front are the ones who like the loud, raucous stuff. And it's like, you know, live, we tend to play that. But the ones we really like are the ones who are too afraid to come up and say hello. The ones with the brains, the stupid ones up front. I mean, we love them too, but...
Well, we couldn't honestly exist without the people in front. I mean, it's the bad thing. You can only see the loudmouths. So it's hard to sometimes remember that there's someone in back who's been waiting for a year to hear you play Skyway or something. And those really are the ones people that you want to run out and hug and say, like, you know, we did it for you.
Are you taking a different approach to touring?
We've never had a set list, and I think this time we are going to get a vague indication, which doesn't mean a set list, but it means, like, let's not start with this song, let's not end with that, and anywhere in between we can sort of wing it. Anything really goes. If someone is dying to hear a song that we don't remember and Slim doesn't know, you know, what the hell, you paid your money, we'll try it. But I think we'll play pretty much all of the new record. Skyway is questionable, although Slim says he has an acoustic guitar for me to borrow, and we'll both maybe play that. Nightclub Jitters, my piano playing is, you know, less than dynamite. So Liberace I ain't, although I do have the shoes.
And there's the cuckoo clock telling us that time is up. Many thanks to Paul Westerberg, Tommy Stinson, Chris Mars, and Slim Dunlap. Thanks also to Julie Panabianco and Sire Records. The songs you heard during this podcast were all taken from the Replacements album Pleased to Meet Me, and they were Nightclub Jitters, Valentine, Skyway, and Nevermind. The entire Replacements catalog can be streamed wherever you stream your favorite music. Abandoned Albums was recorded at Thunder Love Studios.
Produced and written by Keith R. Higgins and Rob Janicki.
Engineered and mixed by Steve Beasley. Edited by A.J. Royce.
Original music by Mike Pellegrino. If you like what you've heard, be sure to subscribe and follow us on social media. At Twitter, we are at Abandon Albums, and on Instagram, we are at Abandon_albums.
As always, thanks to Rob Janicki, S.W. Loudon, Nathan Sage, Steve Beasley, Mike Pellegrino, Therina Bella, and of course, our executive producer, Rufus Thunderlove.
And now, until we meet again next time, I remain as always obediently yours.
Abandoned Albums is a production of Station Road, LLC. If you've made it this far, then you deserve to know that almost all of the answers here provided by Paul Westerberg are from a 1987 promotional LP that was released to promote Pleased to Meet Me. All we did was sort of pull out the questions, add our own questions, mix up the wording a little bit, so they're sort of in the Abandoned Albums vein. And there are a couple of quotes that were taken from an MTV interview around the same time when they were promoting their 1987 album, Pleased to Meet Me. So if you have any questions about that or any lawsuits you'd like to file, we'll have to refer you to our lawyer, Lulu McGillicuddy, Esquire.